Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for finding us, which is fairly difficult. If you're listening to this program, it means you really, really want to listen to this program. It's not like when you turn on AM radio anywhere in the country during the day, and for the most part, all you hear is right-wing drivel, right? There are a few exceptions, of course. Our boy Tom Hartman is one. We have a little story about Hartman here. We'll get to in a second. TheHill.com is reporting what happened a little bit yesterday when Bob Gates, Secretary of Defense, was sitting before the House Foreign Affairs Committee for questioning. And one of his answers was this. And see if you can sort this out. I can't. And I'm not going to dwell on it tonight. I just want to toss it out there because it's kind of bizarre. Once again, you begin to wonder if all of your suspicions about who is really running the country are not suspicions at all, but just momentary breakthroughs of fact. Gates said the following, quote, "I have adamantly opposed deadlines. I opposed them in Iraq, and I opposed deadlines in Afghanistan. But what the president has announced is the beginning of a process, not the end of a process. And it is clear that this will be a gradual process. And as he said last night, based on conditions on the ground. So, there is no deadline for the withdrawal of American forces in Afghanistan." Really? I thought I'd heard that there were withdrawals in 18 months. Oh, well. I guess it was my... Wait a minute. This is damn television. Okay, there. Now, maybe the next time Obama speaks, I get it right. Nah, what do you think? I got an email from from a listener who also listens to Tom Hartman. That would be Debbie. Debbie writes, "Mike, finally, some rage from Tom Hartman. At 43 past the first hour of his show today, he was talking with a caller who was not listening to what he was saying, and Tom used the word hell on the air in regard to this never-ending war. His rage is finally showing. Yes! Hartman said hell on the air? Quick, somebody look outside. The last time something like this happened, a star appeared in the east.
And Molly announced it.
And Molly announced it. What does that mean? What did Molly announce?
Well, I'm just still so excited that Molly has been chosen to be the Christmas angel in the school pageant.
Oh, no, we weren't going to tell anybody.
Oh. She's going to look so cute up there. My little atheist daughter with her little golden wings and halo.
As you know, well, Molly's not an atheist. You
no,
and
that's
I are.
True.
You know,
Molly's
a little believer, and that's okay for the time being. You know, she's 5 years old, for God's sake. But we
I should say daughter of atheists.
Daughter of atheists is more like it. But she goes to a Presbyterian kindergarten, and we found out that in the Christmas play, she has the only speaking role. She is the angel.
I love my Christian daughter. I don't care. She can be anything she wants to be.
She is the angel who notifies the shepherds of, "Behold, I bring you great tidings of good joy," or whatever. It's in the book of Luke. We'll do it. And she gets to say that, and she was very happy when we picked her up at kindergarten today, and she couldn't wait to get in the car and tell us that the tension was almost palpable in kindergarten while they were waiting for the selections of the different roles. Would she play Joseph? Would she play Mary? Would she be a wise man or a shepherd? She's going to be the angel! Well, that's...
Well, she was, you know, she said that she didn't get to wear a headdress like Mary.
That's true.
Only Mary gets to wear something on her head. But I said, "Well, you get a halo." She said, "But my robe is gold and it's sparkly and it has swirls and stars all over it." So that's all she cared about.
So she gets to announce the birth of a Palestinian Jew whose followers founded a religion based on his simple teachings. Oh, well. All right, where are we? Sorry for the sidetrack there. It was just a very, a marked day in the Malloy family when the atheist parents of a little five-year-old says, I'm going to be the angel in the Christmas play. All righty then. That's good, Molly. That's good. There is an event coming up in South Pasadena, California, and in Venice, California. Both not very far from each other at all, are they? Well, sort of. But and I want to mention this to you because a couple of people I know are involved in this. Scott Ritter, the former U.N. weapons inspector, Robert Scheer, who used to work for the L.A. Times and now works for Truth Dig, a journalist and author, Peter Richardson, and an Iraq veteran, Peter Richardson, who's an author, and George Andreas Pogani, who's an Iraq veteran, they are all going to be together. They're going to be discussing war, media, and the plight of veterans. Okay? Scott Ritter is a captain, or was a captain, in the Marine Corps. George Andreas Pogani, I don't know what branch of service, but he's an Iraq veteran, probably, maybe Army. And this Saturday, day after tomorrow, at 2 o'clock, at the Venice United Methodist Church on Lincoln Boulevard in Venice, California, if you live in that area, we have a lot of listeners on KTLK, and strong suggestion that you go hear this. It's free, but the suggested donation to go to this is $10. Seating is first come, first served. Now, that's Saturday. On Sunday, the next day, the same group will be at the Women's Club of South Pasadena, and that's on Fremont Avenue in South Pasadena, California. All the proceeds from this will benefit the Veterans Project. You know, when you put the $10 down, then none of that goes to Scott or Robert or the other two guys. It goes to the Veterans Project, a nonprofit campaign supporting organizations that help military veterans try to reintegrate into society when they come home. Part of the missions of the Veterans Project is to deal with, to remove the stigma associated with PTSD. And, to try to raise operating funds for organizations that provide veterans with psychological care and maybe stop the post-war suicides that are just rampant right now. Now, you can get more information on this by going to theveteransproject.org, theveteransproject.org. Saturday, day after tomorrow, Venice United Methodist Church, 2 to 4. Sunday, Women's Club of South Pasadena, 2 to 4. And each event will include a panel discussion. I've sat on one of those panels with Scott Ritter. As a matter of fact, it was just Scott and me out in Phoenix. And he is, he's one hell of a speaker. You know who Scott Ritter is? You know, he was one of the weapons. He's a Republican, or was. I don't know what he is now. He's probably, like me, kind of giving it up. But career military, 10-year Marine, I think 10-year Marine combat veteran who became a U.N. weapons inspector. And he knew the lies that were being perpetrated on the American public when the Bush crime family decided to bomb and invade Iraq, even though there was nothing there. And Scott Ritter was one of those inspectors who determined there was nothing there. So, this Saturday, Venice United Methodist Church, 2 to 4. And Sunday, Women's Club of South Pasadena, 2 to 4. Robert Scheer, of course, is one of the best journalists in the country. If you're familiar with L.A. Times, they fired him from the L.A. Times because he was too damn good. Or maybe he resigned. I don't know. So I've been asked to announce that, and I do so happily. So if you want further information, theveteransproject.org. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Psst! You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's 21 past the hour. Prairie 2 writes in. I want to share with you what our economic affairs correspondent has to say. Mike, the Dubai World Company, who is currently unable to pay some $60 billion in loans, had the equity markets wound pretty tight over the weekend, but everything seemed to settle down on Monday. If you're not familiar with Dubai World, they have the giant palm tree sand structure that you can see from space. Built to service the pretend economy created by the financial services industry, it will probably go down in history as a giant white elephant that you can see from space. You may remember one of their sister companies, Dubai Ports World, a favorite of the Bush crime family, was slated to take over all of our major seaports. The ones not already controlled by Red China. Dubai World is not, however, the worst threat to the world economy and not the largest over-leveraged entity likely to fail. A ridiculous amount of money has been created out of thin air by the world's central banks in an attempt to keep up with the Federal Reserve's wholesale printing of money over the last 15 years. Everything is leveraged to the hilt, and any deflation will drag all those debt-laden companies under. In a world where everybody works for a corporation, the fallout will be severe. Already in the United States, 1 in 8 adults and 1 in 4 children receive food stamps. Only 2/3 of those eligible receive nutritional assistance. And although reformed in 2007, it still is not adequate, and food banks are struggling to keep up. In really blighted areas of this country, 50% of residents receive food aid. Pontiac, Michigan has 35% unemployment. And standing in the line to sign up for food stamps can take all day. Massive layoffs of city workers, including about half the city police force. The governor has declared a state of emergency and replaced the city's officials. The population of Pontiac is about 700,000. And so probably has about 280,000 people who have or would like to have a job. This is about how many jobs are officially being lost each month in the United States. Pontiac syndrome is slowly spreading across this country. Pray to. It's very shivery. You can check out his website, prairie2.com. What else we have? Oh, yeah, PETA. Y'all familiar with PETA? People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, one of the most controversial activist groups operating today. They're not controversial because of what they do. They're controversial because of what they expose and how the right wing and the corporate food monsters react. This is the group that has the media campaigns, the undercover operations, the high-profile demonstrations. As a result, according to treehugger.com, this is probably the most notorious and most polarizing nonprofit organization there is. But guess what? According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they are now terrorists. It's a terrorist organization, PETA, for Christ's sake. And right when PETA was about to call it quits, too, according to treehugger.com, the USDA has just released a new security profile form, which it distributes to animal experimentation facilities. The form reveals that PETA has been classified as a terrorist threat by the U.S. government, potentially opening up its members to prosecution as terrorists. According to Green is the New Red, an eco-activist rights website, the document was given to all facilities that conduct experiments on animals. And they were asked to disclose whether they were the target of attacks or harassment from a list of terrorist groups, one of which is PETA. Now, here's a little excerpt from the form that went out. B, terrorist threat. What terrorist activities have occurred in or around your building or facility in the last 15 years? Documented cases. Please check all that apply. Attack from international terrorists. Attack from domestic special interest terrorists. Earth Liberation Front. Animal Liberation Front. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Animal Defense League. Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. Formal hate groups, please specify. Others, please specify. Cyber attack from a known or unknown source. Oh, my God. So, PETA has been classified as a domestic special interest terrorist organization. I don't know what to say about it. You can read more. Go to treehugger.com. PETA? You know, PETA was, I think PETA was the one that got into the slaughterhouses, the cattle slaughterhouses, and showed the down cattle being prodded to stand up so it can go be killed and eaten. PETA, a domestic terrorist organization. Gosh, who would have thought?
Mike Malloy.
Hey, listen, Truth Seekers, I want to tell you about this again. You know, there are two sides to every story, and what we have out there for the people who share Sarah Palin's hate-filled comedy politics, they have the number one best-selling book in America to present their case. That's Sarah Palin's faux biography. And then, of course, they got Limbaugh and Coulter and Fox News to promote it. On the other side is us. Our resources are a little less powerful, but we have a highly entertaining solution for you. If you want to show your opposition to everything that Sarah Palin stands for, and to enjoy a book that the Huffington Post describes as a superb, engaging read from start to finish, have we got a book for you. It's called Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare. And it's been assembled by two senior editors at The Nation magazine. It's got the best writing on Palin, bar none, including contributions by Naomi Klein, Katrina Vandenheuvel, Matt Taibbi, Eve Ensler, Frank Rich, Katha Pollitt, and Tom Frank. Now, you can order it as a paperback or as an ebook from the link at my website, MikeMalloy.com. It's a great holiday gift, too. So, you know, don't let the neocons have the tea party all themselves, okay? Go to MikeMalloy.com and get Going Rouge. Do we get a free one? Do you think we get a free copy? I hope so, because I can't wait to read that. Bruce wants everybody to know, I made another mistake. It was not PETA. It was the local humane societies that did the down cow videos. PETA mostly does those print ad campaigns against fur with the naked actresses. Yeah, I can't understand why that would be considered a terrorist act. Oh, well. All right. I want to share with you some of the acute Republican hypocrisy, lies, and denials. And we're going to let the Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson do it in her own words. Now, she's running for governor of California, right? No, what's she running for? Is she running for governor? I guess she is, against Rick Goodhair Perry. Is that right? Have I got that right? Okay. And she's in a contest with, this is sinister and sinisterer who are running to be governor of Texas. What does she think? She'll make a step to the presidency like her old buddy George Bush did. But anyway, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, you almost hate to criticize her since she's running against Rick Perry. But because he is just an absolute class A schmuck from the word go. But Kay Bailey Hutchinson is no world-class civil rights person herself. So I want you to hear something. She was on MSNBC the other day on David Schuster's program. And what you're going to hear, Kay Hutchinson just can't understand why anyone would care that she's a hypocrite and a liar with her concern for troop levels in Afghanistan now that a Democrat's in the White House. When Schuster asked her why she and other Republicans didn't have anything to say back in 2008 when George Bush refused a troop increase in Afghanistan, Hutchinson punts and never answers the question. And instead, she says she doesn't know why we're talking about 2008. Now, I am not advocating here troops to Afghanistan. I like to see them all get out. But now Kay Bailey Hutchinson, along with all these other filthy goddamn Republicans who turn my stomach, are jumping all over Obama. Well, he dithered around. He's And when Bush was approached by who was the commander then, David McKiernan, General McKiernan, who wanted troops, and Bush said no, or Cheney said no, or somebody said no. Where was Kay Bailey Hutchinson? Where were these Republican swine in 2008? Right, we start out with Schuster, and then Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
Senator, the complaint from Democrats, though, is that you're essentially shopping for the right generals. And Democrats are pointing out that in September of 2008, when President Bush was in office, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan at the time, General David McKiernan, said this about his request for an additional 22,000 troops. Quote, "The danger is that we'll be here longer and we'll spend more resources experience more human suffering than if we had more resources placed against this campaign sooner. The additional military capabilities that have been asked for are needed as quickly as possible." That request from General McKiernan was not granted until February of this year. It was granted by President Obama. So we acknowledge that Republicans were speaking out today, should have spoken out back at the end of the Bush administration.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what your time frame is, but I think certainly President Obama took several months to address the issue that General McChrystal had asked for more troops. And I think at this point, we need to be talking about winning. We need to be talking about what is success. We need to establish that we are going to stop Al-Qaeda from exporting terrorism. That should be the mission. And we should do whatever it takes to win this war on terror so Americans
but
can
Senator,
live in freedom.
A lot of Republicans weren't saying that when General McKiernan was making the request in the fall of 2008. President Bush, never mind.
Oops, hold on. He went on to say, President Bush, never mind taking 3 months. He didn't act on the request at all, and the Republicans didn't. We've checked your record. Can you refresh our recollection as to whether you were complaining about your colleagues and about the Bush administration ignoring General McKiernan back in the fall of 2008? Okay, we've got it now.
Talking about Secretary Gates was the secretary then, and I know certainly that he is doing everything that he can with the requests that are made for Afghanistan, and we've had a ramp up of troop strength. We've been trying to allocate resources away from Iraq and into Afghanistan. I really don't know why we are talking about what has happened in 2008 so much as we are talking about what's happening for the next 2 years to win this war.
Ah, shut up, goddammit! This is what really drives me right to the wall, almost homicidal, when I hear these filthy, filthy Republicans. I don't know why we're talking about 2008. The reason we're talking about it, you crazy Republican, is because what you people did in 2008 brought us to what's going on now in 2009. These rat bastards, this is what they always do, don't they? This is what they've done during the entirety of the Obama administration up to this point. No matter how you press, well, you allowed torture.
Well, I don't know why we're talking about 2002 and 2003 and 2004 and 2005 and 2006. In 2007 and 2008, we ought to be talking about going forward.
But you wiretapped everybody.
Well, I don't know why we're talking about 2002, 2003. We ought to be going forward.
They do this every time, don't they? Huh? These filthy sons of bitches. I swear. And then this Kay Bailey Hutchinson freak sits there. Well, Secretary Gates was the secretary then, and I know certainly that he is doing everything that he can with requests that are made. I swear to God, it's all I can do to not say things that would result in actionable lawsuits against me. I mean it. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who is just another one of these dead-eyed. I mean, look at these Republican eyes sometimes. I'm serious. Look at them. Jim DeMint, Kay Bailey Hutchinson. Pick one. The freak from Oklahoma. All these freaks from Georgia. Look in their eyes. There's nothing there. These are a species different from you and me. I don't know where in the hell they're from. But they're not like normal human beings. Oh, well. And regarding all that, you know, right now in Afghanistan, there are 68,000 U.S. troops and 42,000 from other countries. So it's about 110,000 troops. In the recently revised counterinsurgency manual put together by people like McChrystal, the U.S. Army estimates that an all-out counterinsurgency campaign in a country with Afghanistan's population the population and size, it will require 600,000 troops. Are you listening? 600,000. That's McChrystal. That's the United States Army's estimate of what it's going to take to defeat whoever it is we're trying to defeat. I don't know anymore. There's 100 Al-Qaeda fighters there. The Taliban represents, I don't know what percentage of the population. I have no idea. You know, I don't give a goddamn. I really don't. Do you? I don't care if every one of the sons of bitches are Taliban. If the time comes when the female half of the population in Afghanistan gets tired of it, they will go to bed at night with a sharp knife. And when the son of a bitch who rules them is asleep, they will roll over and his five wives will jump him. Four of them will hold the bastard down and the fifth one will cut his throat. And if they do that in every one of those freak-ass mud huts that scattered around in the villages of Afghanistan. You know, let us get our people out. Let the people of Afghanistan get rid of these religious psychopaths. And the only way to do it is to kill the sons of bitches. That's what we're doing. Let the Afghan women loose. They will do it. Before the hour, it's the one of the worst kept secrets in D.C. and the rest of the country. For those people, that 6% of the population that pays attention, that includes you and me. It's the drone aircraft program where we put these aircraft up. The Predators, they're called, you know. And they're run by CIA officers at the agency's headquarters in Langley, Virginia. And they sit there with the screens that look like video games, and half a world away in Afghanistan are these Predator drones that are flying overhead with Hellfire missiles. And 2 weeks ago, this is, by the way, this is in tomorrow's New York Times. 2 weeks ago in Pakistan, CIA sharpshooters killed 8 people suspected of being militants of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. All right, 8 from 100, we're down to 92. Wounded 2 others in a compound that was said to be used for terrorist training. That was in Pakistan, north of Waziristan, which I believe is in Pakistan. And when they were finished, as the Times reports, Scott Shane in the Times tomorrow says the CIA officers could then head home from the agency's Langley, Virginia headquarters. And the only hazards they had to face were suburban traffic on, you know, the beltways around D.C. Son of a bitch. It's really getting weird. So the point here, we are in a third country now, and have been. I mean, this is where Blackwater has been operating, assassinating people extrajudicially, not even a military tribunal. Just somebody says, well, this person works for Al-Qaeda, this person works for the Taliban, this person is trying to organize resistance to the United States, go kill them. And they get killed. Very simple. You know? Anyway, according to tomorrow's Times, the White House has authorized an expansion of this program into Pakistan. And this is to parallel, according to officials, I don't know who they are, to parallel Obama's decision of the other night to send 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan. American officials are talking with Pakistan about the possibility of striking in Baluchistan for the first time. Now, what is critical about that, Baluchistan is not part of the so-called tribal areas where, I guess, the CIA believes all these people are hiding. Baluchistan is not part of that area. It is another separate and discrete section of Pakistan, right? Isn't it? About 80 missile attacks from these Predator drones over the last 2 years have killed more than 400 enemy fighters, according to a CIA official or a Pentagon official. 400 enemy fighters. His count of collateral damage, however, you know, other people, collateral damage, right? Innocent people, children, women, for the most part. He says, we believe the number of civilian casualties is just over 20, and those were people who were either at the side of major terrorists or were at facilities used by terrorists, so screw them. No, I added that last part. That claim about civilian casualties, which this official said reflected the Predator's ability to loiter over a target, feeding these images, video images, for hours before and after a strike, that claim is likely to come under close scrutiny by human rights advocates. Tom Parker, who is a policy director for counterterrorism at Amnesty International, said he found the estimates of 20 unlikely. And he says, you know, people should be uneasy with drone attacks anyway because, quote, anything that dehumanizes the process makes it easier to pull the trigger, end quote. And it goes on. You can find it online. It's online at nytimes.com right now under CIA expanding drone assaults inside Pakistan. But the point, to me, the hideous part of all this is, you know, this is like Nixon in Laos and Cambodia, which brought about the Kent State demonstrations and 4 people dead, 4 students dead, when it was revealed by, was it the Times or the Post, that Nixon had ordered attacks into another country. And I realized that, of course, that Obama has not ordered attacks into another country. That was Bush and Cheney. And that has been going on. We also have people on the ground in Iran that are doing sabotage and committing murder and destabilizing anything they can destabilize. But now in Pakistan, where in addition to Blackwater, we have CIA operatives. I don't know, they're probably private contractors. The U.S. military, for obvious reasons, likes to keep its hands clean of operations like this, even except for General McChrystal, who worked in that special assassination squad set up by Dick Cheney. But regular Army and people in the regular officer corps and so on and so forth, war is war, but, you know, dancing around in the darkness, assassinating people for no reason other than somebody says, go kill that one and let that one live, but kill that one right next door. Oh, and by the way, if you take out their family, well, you know, collateral damage. I mean, do you realize what's going on? I guess you do. I do. Here we are dying at home, and yet we've found another country that that it's okay to go inside their borders. Now, what would happen if Mexico decided to come into, Southern California and start shooting people in the Schwarzenegger administration because of Mexico? Well, you know where I'm going with that, right? CIA expanding drone assaults inside Pakistan. That's a hell of a headline, isn't it? We'll be right back. Stay with us. It is about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. All right, in regard to that story from the New York Times, it'll be in tomorrow's paper. It's up on their website right now. The drone predators that are operated from Langley, Virginia, and kill people in Afghanistan in real time. Bill in Ottawa sent me a video. We're going to put the video up on our website. It'll be up there within half an hour at MikeMalloy.com. But we're going to play the audio for you right now. What you will see when we have the video up, you'll see a dark-haired man in civilian clothing calling coordinates in front of a bank of computer screens, and a redheaded woman who is operating the controls. They're both angels of death. And working for the CIA. And in this video, you'll see how she flies the Predator from, you know, 15,000 miles away and delivers the missiles, along with another agent in the next computer rig sitting right to her left. Both are pilot and sensor in the same mission. What you'll see in the video, is how it works. Two agents in Langley, Virginia, in a basement, pulling levers and clicking buttons on a multi-display rig connected in real time with predators flying anywhere around the world. Only in this case, it's in Afghanistan. Let's go ahead and play it. And you'll get the sound here, and within half an hour, it'll be up on my website. Go ahead.
Target size.
Pilot copies.
Sensor copies.
White pickup arrived in front of target building.
Pilot copy.
Two passengers, including target 5, have entered the building from the white pickup. Confirm target in building.
Copy. Sensor confirms.
If possible, keep eyes on building and pick up. Building has the priority.
Pilot. MC, in order to do that, I need tail 107 to come off its current target. Get permission for 107 to come south.
MC, copy.
And sensor, leave the bridge locked up till we get permission to come off that target.
Roger, Wilco.
Pilot, MC, shade 22, cleared off target.
Sensor, you can break lock on the bridge and lock up the target 5. with tail 107.
Roger.
And we got 60 degrees more of heading.
Copy.
Pilot, Sentinel, request weapons loadout.
Sentinel, pilot, I've got 8 missiles and 2 bombs on 2 Predators in the target vicinity.
Target 5, leaving building, entering pickup. Pickup now has priority.
Pilot copies.
Sensor copies.
Pilot, Sentinel, expect to be cleared hot on way pickup.
Pilot, so let's spin up a weapon on tail 107.
Copy.
Pre-launch checklist.
PRF code.
Entered.
AEA power.
On.
AEA bit.
In progress. Passed.
Weapon power.
On.
Weapon bit.
Passed.
Code weapons.
Coded.
Weapon status.
Weapons ready.
Pre-launch checklist complete.
Pilot, Sentinel, you're clear to engage white pickup truck at your discretion.
Pilot, clear to engage white pickup truck. It's like it's on the move. Launch checklist. MTS auto track.
Established.
Laser.
Laser selected.
Go ahead and arm your laser.
Laser's armed.
Master arm is hot. Go ahead and fire the laser.
Lasing.
Within range. 3, 2, 1, rifle. 3, 2, 1, impact. Excellent job.
Excellent job. Okay. Excellent job. It's we'll have it up at the website in 15, 20 minutes. By the bottom of the hour, you can go look at it. You can watch as this white pickup truck is obliterated as a result of a trigger pulled by the female CIA officer back in Langley, Virginia. Pretty strange. If it's that easy to do, then why? I mean, why have another 30,000 American soldiers and Marines go into Afghanistan? I'm seriously. I'm not asking a stupid question, gratuitous question here. What's the point? We've been told over and over again by the experts in the field, whether the CIA or U.S. military or diplomats or whoever, people understand. If our real objective is to eliminate Al Qaeda, you're never going to eliminate the Taliban. That'd be like eliminating the Catholic priesthood in a different setting. Come on, Jesus Christ! They're, you know, these are just who these people are. They're the Taliban, okay? But if our goal is to eliminate the remaining 98 Al Qaeda fighters that are left in Pakistan, Afghanistan, why send troops that are going to be blown to pieces? Why not just sit up there with the woman and the man at Langley, Virginia, and fire off the video games and kill people that way? Right? I mean, why is there any question about this? When you see the video, it's very effective. It's not quite Star Wars-y because these people just look like regular folks. That's the chilling part. When you see this man and this woman, these are not military people. These are CIA people who are casually killing folks. I mean, they're just, God damn, They're just sitting in this basement office with the computer banks in front of them, and they're getting this and that coming through their headphones. That was the muffled voice you heard in the background. Okay, we have a Predator. It's about 6 degrees south. All right, bring it over here. Take it off target. The new target, the primary target now is this white pickup truck. All right, two people have come out of the building. They got in the white pickup, and they follow this thing. I mean, this is real-time stuff. And, well, you heard them. Very detached, very cool, very, kind of like my son Chris used to be when he got his first Mario Brothers game. Man, have you got it up yet? It is up now? Okay, go to MikeMolloy.com, and there is, what's the caption on it? War or video game? War as a video game. Go look at it. Don't crash my site. Just go, Just go look at this. It runs in, what, a minute 15. Go look at this. I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. I really don't. I'd like to know how they make a determination. I realize we have contractors on the ground in Pakistan, Waziristan, Afghanistan, Baluchistan, you know, all the stands. We have, you know, we've got all kinds of people, Blackwater and Dyncor and whoever one assumes, let me put it that way, that all these private contractors, these spooks, these killers are out there painting the targets for the people back in Langley, you know, 15,000 miles away. Okay, if that's how it's done, then what are the 30,000 troops about that Obama's going to send over there? What are the 22,000 that he sent back in the spring? What are they? What's the point? I mean, what are they going to do? See, somebody is telling us a whole bunch of goddamn lies, aren't they? Huh? Somebody is really, really, really lying to us. It sounds like if we're told there are about 100 Al-Qaeda operatives left and it was Al-Qaeda that organized the attacks on this country 8 goddamn years ago, huh? Huh? Then why are we, what are we doing? What's with the 100,000 troops in Afghanistan? To do what? We don't need that. We have predators. We have nice, sedate young men and young women who can sit in a basement in Langley, Virginia at CIA headquarters in front of a bank of video screens and wipe people out at their whim. And their pickup trucks. And anything else that they're traveling in. So what's the point? I'm serious. What's the point with all the soldiers? Minnesota, to the hills of Tennessee. Across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to L.A., well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me, and I'll gladly stand up next to you when they send her till the day.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. If you do go to MikeMalloy.com and look at that video, send me just a quick email and let me know what you thought. All right. Bill, who sent it to me, writes, Mike, the ability to kill people remotely, cheaply, and without any risk to your own personnel changes the equation of war completely. For a long time after Vietnam, the U.S. was reluctant to send its troops in harm's way. Now, using robot killers, wars can be fought at little cost and no risk. Look for the tempo and pace of U.S. interventions to increase dramatically. Also, look for some enterprising terrorists to turn this technology around and fly their own RPVs into the White House or the Super Bowl. Turnabout, after all, is fair play. Yeah, we can put those things through the side window of a white Toyota pickup truck from, I don't know, how high up do those drones fly? Let's just say around 10,000 feet. I'm sure they can go as high as they want to go. Aerodynamically, I don't know what their limitations are, but they're no pilots. So they, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. But when that technology is turned against us, then what? People with box cutters? Nah. Some little old drone aircraft, some RPV flying in from I don't know where, from Guatemala maybe, or the jungles of Costa Rica? Who knows? You know. Those poor bastards in Pakistan and Afghanistan, they don't know where death has just hit them. I mean, it's like they're driving down the highway, and then they're not. It's like that. You know what I mean? KC in Eugene, Oregon, who is with Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Veterans for Peace, and Vietnam Veterans of America, and VeteransAgainstTorture.com, writes, Mike, when Kennedy was killed, I was in high school. There were about 16,000 troops in Vietnam, troops that it was believed he planned to withdraw. When I was sent to Vietnam in 68 as part of the troop surge, there were, when I arrived, approximately 500,000 troops. Half a million young Americans, the average age being, officers included, 19 and a half years old. I could tell you how well that troop surge worked out, but you already know that, don't you? KC in Eugene, Oregon. Also got an email earlier today from Bill who cites a Pew poll. There's a new poll on torture. Here's what it is from the Pew's website. Public opinion about the use of torture remains divided, though the share saying it can at least sometimes be justified has edged upward over the past year. Currently, just over half of Americans now say that the use of torture against suspected terrorists in order to gain information can either often or sometimes be justified. The total, often 19%, sometimes 35%, is at 54%. As the Pew research says, this is the first time in over 5 years of Pew research polling on this question that a majority has expressed these views. Another 16% say torture can rarely be justified, and 25% say it can never be justified. So 56 to 41. Even though, and this is the part that's maddening, even though the experts on torture, not the ones who did the torture, but the people who know how it works and how people who are being tortured respond, they will tell you and have told all of us that the information gotten under torture is useless. It's not like the TV show 24, although apparently George Bush and Dick Cheney thought it was. The information gotten under torture is not information to that finally the person being tortured gives up. It's information that is manufactured in order to make the torturing stop. Jesus Christ, do you have to have a degree in psychology to figure that out? So that half of Americans who support torture now, over half, where does that come from? Does it come from television? Does it come from movies? Where does it come from? Because it goddamn sure doesn't come from fact-based reality. It just doesn't. Jesus. Oh, quick, quick, quick. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her king. La-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. Over the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring. La-da-da-da-da. Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la. Don we now our gay apparel, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tell the ancient truth I carol.
You must say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll.
nice guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. A couple emails very quickly here. This is from Mitch. The subject line is, "Are you blanking me? Mike, I'm a Vietnam vet and I'm tired of hearing this crap coming from our government with very few of our great citizens eating with..." Wait a minute. "I'm a Vietnam vet, and I'm tired of hearing this crap coming from our government and our citizens eating it up. You were talking about the war and how we have collateral damage and just how many of the possible or suspected enemy we kill with our drone missions. Are the people of the United States really that stupid, or don't they care anymore? Have you ever seen a Hellfire missile explode? Do you think that a missile fired from a drone can hit a house, a single house, and not do a hell of a lot of damage? Come on, folks, give me a break. And why are we, the citizens of this country, allowing civilians like the CIA to kill people? We don't seem to care anymore who is able to sit back and just decide who lives and who dies. The reported 20 innocents killed is hard to believe. Maybe 20 were killed at one time. When I was in Vietnam and we bombed or shelled a, quote, possible enemy position or ville, end quote, any bodies found were listed as, quote, enemy killed, end quote, because if they were there, then they must have been the enemy. Let's stop the crazy use of drones. We're taking humanity out of war and making it a video game." We're taking the humanity out of war. Yeah, well, it's... And who's this? Sandy? "Regarding drones, when will they turn their joysticks on PETA, Greenpeace, Quakers, and us other terrorists here?" Yeah, that's true. I mean, if it's this easy to do it in Langley and what's the one in outside Las Vegas? Kate just wrote to me about it. Nellis Air Force Base, where they also run these things. Yeah. Jared writes, "Mike, how long will it be before those drones will be flying over the ghettos? South Central LA, Oakland, Detroit, or Minneapolis? Damn, those CIA spooks are cold-blooded, aren't they? But they don't have to look their targets in the eyes when they kill them." Jared, yeah, that's true. And Tom in Minneapolis, "This technology can also be used against U.S. citizens who protest U.S. government policies. Think they can fly a drone over LA to seek out a meeting of anti-war protesters and kill them? Frightening stuff." All right, I want to just let me do this, and then we'll go to your phone calls. Last night we were talking about depleted uranium and what it's doing to the, I mean, this is not a new topic, and I don't mean to sound cavalier about this, but it's not. This has been going on since shortly after Gulf War I, where we used depleted uranium back in the early 90s. So we've had a full generation of Iraqis born with their land, their country totally saturated with depleted uranium and the attendant radiation. And the report that I was referring to last night comes from the hospitals in Fallujah. You could also say the hospitals in Basra and Baghdad and over the past 15 years, but all the births, 20 years, all the births of children with no head or two heads or one eye or no limbs or, you know. This is from Jeff. "I'm like, ironic when you talk about the effects of depleted uranium in Iraq, it brings home the horrors of our fascination with nukes. The Bethlehem Steel Corporation that rolls the steel with depleted uranium to manufacture the ammo has poisoned all the men that work in those mills. A class action lawsuit was filed against the steel company. Senator Hillary Clinton assisted those workers. I heard one of the workers tell a story how he cursed Hillary because she was a Democrat and a woman. But then the idiot found out that Hillary stood up for him and all the workers that are dying from the effects of the depleted uranium in the mills. He did a 180. Suddenly, she, Hillary, was okay. Workers that vote Republican equal, bad word, or blue dogs. We are so effed. During the 1950s, as you know, the surface test of the nukes in Yucca Flats, Nevada, were frequent. Every time they set the nukes off, it was done before sunrise in the dark. I was a teen in Kingman, Arizona during that era. First time I saw it go from dark to daylight in an instant, it terrified me the first time. The end result was all those in the path of the westerly winds were nuked. My prize was the demolition of my thyroid. Driving was difficult because I would fall asleep behind the wheel until the doctor tested me for lack of thyroid hormone. Bada bing, I take Synthroid daily for the rest of my life. I wonder how many lost their thyroid or worse growing up in the path of that fallout. Keep up the rants, Mike. Jeff, an FDR Democrat. We are few and far between. I didn't know that about... That makes sense. All the workers in this country who work with the depleted uranium to manufacture it, yeah. All sick, dying. Don't have children, guys. All right. Some phone calls. Rick is driving in Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of... talk radio and everything, and on one of the shows that I was listening to, there's a man on there saying that those trees are going to be sent over there to protect a pipeline that's being built
right
from Iraq across Afghanistan to Georgia or someplace, and the Afghans don't want it over there, and they keep blowing it up, so they need more troops over there to protect that pipeline.
Well, I think that's the case, Rick, only it's not coming from Iraq. It's coming from north of Afghanistan, up in the Tajikistan and Kazakhstan and all the area north of northwest, I believe it would be, of Afghanistan. Afghanistan's a landlocked country. There's no port. So, but they don't want to go, as you mentioned, they don't want to run a pipeline over the territory controlled by the Soviets, and they damn sure can't run it through Iran. So the idea, or not the Soviets, excuse me, controlled by the Russians or former Russian satellite countries that could still be affected by the Russians getting froggy with them. So the pipeline will come down through Afghanistan into Pakistan and then to a port on the Indian Ocean where waiting will be the American or transnational oil companies and natural gas companies with the huge tankers to offload the stuff and go out and make money. So you're absolutely right. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it. They are there to protect that pipeline and have been for a long time and will be until the damn thing is built. I don't know. Jesus, it's crazy. Thanks, Rick. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Hope you're well.
Yeah, doing great. You too.
Well, Sandy kind of stole my thunder on one thing on PETA since there seemed to be a little bit of a link there being declared as a possible terrorist target and drones flying over PETA headquarters. You know, that's just nuts.
Yeah, you know, I don't think Barack Obama or even Dick Cheney would be that insane to use these. But you know, who's to say who comes next? I don't think a Sarah Palin or a Glenn Beck would hesitate a moment to use a predator to wipe out some non-Jesus believing infidel. They wouldn't hesitate for a second, and their kids and their grandmammy too. You know.
Yeah. And also the video you're referring to online.
Yeah.
I've got a pretty good memory, so I remember back 6-7 years ago when Shock and Awe was
right,
going on.
Right, right, uh-huh.
And those images are burned, unfortunately, indelibly. So the video's not necessary, but the audio was real spooky, creepy, awful. I was listening to two people doing their jobs. Military, I don't know, maybe they're outsourced CIA contractors, but the voice, the background.
Mm-hmm.
You remember 2001, Space Odyssey, HAL?
Oh, yeah.
It sounded like a much, much more malevolent, yet horrible, neutered HAL.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the really creepy part. That was truly sobering.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who is that voice? That was
Which voice?
Not the man or the woman.
Oh, the other voice, the third voice was. Yeah. I would imagine it was the. I don't want to say spotter. It was somebody who was working the. I'm guessing here, working the data that was coming back from the predators
from the drone.
Okay. Yeah, I would assume.
Okay.
Now that website I have, or that link I have up my website, should if you cruise around that website, it should have all the information there to clarify that. I'm not sure. I was just blown away with the casualness of these two civilians sitting there killing people in Afghanistan in a white pickup truck. That's pretty unnerving. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
If it's me and the Iraqi people you're after, then why have we waited so long? Why didn't we sort this out last time? Was he less evil than he is now? The stock market holds the answer to why him, why here, why now?
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Crazy Tom is calling from Bullhead City, Arizona.
Yeah, hi. I'm going to be in China in 2 days from now. Actually, I'm calling from El Monte. I'm from Bullhead City. You know, my friend Ed Fagan, who calls in all the time, he's listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Ed and Tony Fagan. And, you know, Mike, things in China, they actually have a better country than we do right now. I hate to say this. Oh, please don't throw me off the air. It's true. China has medical. They have health care for everybody right now.
Yeah, most countries that start out socialist do. I don't know what you would call the political system in China right now, fascist capitalism with socialist undertones.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
No, it is terrible.
Right.
It's terrible. The thing is, beer is the same. When you go to a bar, it's about $2 or $3, just like it is here.
Yeah?
Is that bizarre?
What, the beer price?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, you think, well, damn. I mean, they got, you know, right?
Anyway,
I love you, and I just...
I don't know, Tom. Tom, I don't know the comparative price of Chinese and American beer. Huh?
It's the same.
It's the same. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's just freakish. I mean...
You know, I mean... I didn't want to call up and be your favorite secretary, but I want to say something about Obama's speech real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
The guy did a really good thing, something to please everybody, something for everybody.
Yeah.
He heard it.
Yeah.
He wanted to appease the right and appease the left. And that's what he said. He's a one-termer. I'm sorry. I got to go with Ed Schultz. You know?
Yeah.
He's a one-termer. I hate this. I hate this, Mike. But hopefully me and you will live long enough and talk with each other, and I promise I will do my best to keep in contact with you.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it. When you check out some other prices while you're over there. I mean, beer and American and Chinese beer on a parity.
Clothes. More expensive.
Yeah. Check out clothes.
I'm wearing Chinese imported
about,
clothes.
I'll tell you what. Find out the comparative prices of Swiss, or not Swiss, but because I hate Swiss, but, the cheddar cheese in the brick, you know.
Forget that. They are lactose intolerant over there.
Oh, really? Oh, Chinese are lactose intolerant. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Tom, I hope you have a great trip, all right?
Okay. Facebook.
And listen, don't get kidnapped, all right?
Shanghai.
Yeah, well, that too.
But please befriend me on your Facebook. Please do that.
I don't run that. I don't know Facebook from a notebook. You know, Kathy runs Facebook. I have no idea. I think she gets hundreds of people who write every day, and I don't know.
Be up and befriend me, please.
Yeah. The reason Kathy doesn't, you know, open the door for everybody and go through all that is because, well, she has a 5-year-old. And, you know, I think people use Twitter and Facebook and all this other stuff, although we have it. I mean, we have it on available, but they must not have a 5-year-old, you know, because you just, I don't know. I'll pass it on. Thanks, Tom. Have a good trip. Really. Have a great trip. And when you come back, let me know the name of a good Chinese restaurant over there, because we had some Asian food today, and it was wonderful. Oh, my God. Mongolian beef. Whew. It was so good. Here we are. It was 11 o'clock Eastern. We had dinner at 5:30 because we picked Molly up right from gymnastics and went. So 5.5 hours later, I'm still tasting it. So it must have been good stuff. Oh. Okay. I want to get your phone calls, but we have a little while on the break before we go to break. All right. Steve is in Seattle. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. I'm a longtime listener since your WLS days. I was living in Chicago and discovered...
Oh, my God.
You and I have a lot in common with our thoughts. And actually, initially, being an Orthodox Jew, I had opposed your views on Israel. And I'm not here to call about Israel. I'm just here to call you that you've educated me quite a bit over the years. And we also have... Twin boys, same age as your child. So just
hey, well, you know, on the Israel thing, it's my understanding. I have a lot of friends who are Orthodox Jews here in Atlanta, and they are of the opinion that the founding of Israel is an abomination. Meshach, the Messiah has to found Israel. It can't be done by people.
Yeah.
So the state of Israel is to the really, truly religious Orthodox Jews. And I know a couple here in Atlanta. It is an abomination, and they will tell you right to your face, it is an abomination, that this is an insult to God, and that the people who made this declaration in 1948 are playing with their own souls. I don't know. To me...
I agree with you. I also think that, you know, being evil to a people such as the Palestinians with their plight and such an awful... set of conditions and so many things are up, that they're up against. I have a lot of empathy for them. You know, I'm a physician.
Welcome back. It is almost 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We're in the final hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. So if you'd like to join in the conversation, please do so. You know what we're talking about tonight. And we have a couple more things to toss into the mix. But let's go back to Steve, who has called in from Seattle. Thanks for holding on, Steve.
Thanks. Actually, I'm just holding... just to tell you how much I appreciate you. I'm actually going in to take care of a couple of folks here at a nursing home, but wanted to tell you how much I care about your show.
Well, thank you. What's your specialty?
I'm an internal medicine doc, and I was working the last 10 years, 5 of them in Chicago and 5 here in Seattle as a hospital specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 8 months, I've been working exclusively in nursing facilities where there's a huge need for primary care providers that care what they do, you know?
If you have just a minute, what is your sense of overall sense, I guess, if you can encapsulate it, about health care offered in this country and the efforts such as they are to expand insurance coverage for people. What do you think about what's going on right now with the Congress and the Obama administration regarding health insurance reform?
I'm disappointed in the direction that it took. I'm thinking, my gosh, you know, we all rallied to put all of these Democrats in office, and I'm fully in support of a single payer option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked for the VA system when I was training, and I think it's a great system, despite, you know, people's comments about it. It had some of the best medicine that you could practice in this country,
mm-hmm.
and probably still does. But anyway, people don't talk about that. That's not exciting. I think we should have a strong public option. And I know that right now, unfortunately, there's a lot of docs that I work with that won't take Medicare and won't take DSHS, which is here, it's that's Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really sad. I'm sitting here taking care of these people that are fine people that just, you know, were dealt a rough deck of cards,
right?
You know, with their health. And, you know, they certainly didn't choose these problems. They get dropped from their insurance, or they lost a job and they still get sick. And, you know, they're stuck taking DSHS, and they can't, you know, there's a guy I'm taking care of now. He's got colon cancer. He's a young guy. He's just about 50 years old. And how in the world is this guy going to get a surgeon to operate on him? I mean, there are surgeons who will do it, but it's been tough to get follow-up appointments for him.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's treating him like a hot potato. And I'm thinking, this guy's 50. He's got, you know, young kids. He doesn't have insurance, so he's got to go through the public hospital here. But he's been having a hard time getting appropriate follow-up. And it's, you know, I believe
mm-hmm.
it's because of, you know, the attitude that a lot of docs, unfortunately, have about DSHS, you know, taking Medicare, Medicaid. And I can't blame them, because the overhead that they have to pay also, and the amount of training that they, you know, that we have to have. And, you know, I was $150,000 in debt when I got started,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, out of the box. So it's complicated, but I'm not happy with the way that things are going right now. And, you know, I wish we had another option. I believe we will have other options politically, but right now I'm just really not happy with the Obama administration and how they're handling this.
No, I think a lot of people who either still do or at one time did consider themselves Democrats / progressives / liberals or any combination are at this point thoroughly disappointed with this administration. All right, well, Steve, it was good talking to you. I hope you stay in touch, all right?
Thanks.
All right,
Mike, take care.
Okay,
bye-bye.
You too. Take care. You know what he was talking about? My brother Danny, who died at age 42 of colon cancer, had the same situation. He contracted colon cancer at age 36, and he was a struggling artist at the time. He his cartoons had been published in Saturday Evening Post and Good Housekeeping and stuff like that, and he was also... he had a gig with the Toledo Blade newspaper, but it didn't pay a whole lot. And he was married, had one child, and contracted colon cancer at age 36, and had a colonostomy. What is it when they... Colonoscopy is the exam. Colonostomy? Colostomy. Whatever. And... he had no money. He had no health insurance. And he went through Medicaid. He was on Medicaid. And he's been dead for probably 18 years now. But statistically, he's a cancer survivor because he lived for 6 years after the surgery and the colostomy. And then it came back with a vengeance. And when they discovered it again... it had spread to his brain, to his liver, to his, all through his body. And I wasn't with him when he died, but I was very aware of what he was going through. We stayed in touch the last year of his life. We talked almost every night. And I've known ever since his death all those years ago, and I knew at the time, well, there was nothing that I could do for him. The fact that he had no insurance was a death sentence, and it was. Although he's a cancer survivor, you know, he's dead 18 years, but he's still a 15 years, 18 years, but he's still a cancer survivor. And It was rough. My sister got him into an experimental program at Ohio State University that was handled through Ohio State University. You know, but it was just more craziness. You know, it was chemo and colon cancer and chemo and surgery and radiation, the three things that are still standard treatments, have been standard treatments for how many years. They don't work. We all know that. They just don't work. They're not cancer cures. They're an attempt to prolong some life at what expense. I had talked to Danny about hospice at one point in his downward spiral to death, but since he had an eight-year-old at the time, he chose not to do that, but to continue to try to function in the real world. But, you know, I know what Steve's talking about because, you know, I've seen it in my own family. If you have medical care, if you have good insurance, your chances of survival or the proper tests that are necessary to, you know, a colonoscopy, if you don't have insurance, costs, what, a couple of grand? And Danny didn't, had no insurance. It was all Medicaid. I went with him a couple of times for his chemo drips, and it was... at places that, you know, they do the best they can, giving chemotherapy to people, but the treatment is entirely different. Oh, that's all. You know, I mean, everybody's got a story to tell. That's just part of mine. And it just reminded me, I got reminded of it because of what Steve had said. He's a physician and, he sees people who don't have insurance and how difficult it is. I guess the story of the 50-year-old man who has colon cancer is particularly poignant because, you know, Danny, my brother Danny, had a young son too. And, you know, it's hellish to deal with all that when you're 36, as Danny was. So anyway, yeah, it would have been nice to have seen, the sort of progress or medical procedures available had Dan had good health insurance, but he just couldn't afford it. And this was all those years ago. I mean, you know, a lot of people say, well, Jesus, Malloy, it was almost 20 years ago. It couldn't have been that expensive. Well, you know, when you're an illustrator, an artist, and he was very talented, right on the brink of being syndicated, it was really, it was just a real heartbreaker when he was told that he had, it's for the second time, inoperable colon cancer, metastasized colon cancer. And, you know, the people who work in a creative field, you know artists, you probably have some in your family, artists, singers, musicians, whatever. It's difficult at certain stages in those careers, especially when you're young. And when you're young, you know, 36 is young. Oh, my God. You know, you don't think about that. You just, you know, well, I'll do that later. I'll get insurance later when I get a real job. Right now, I'm working on my art. And that was the part that, to me, was particularly ugly, was the fact that Danny's cartoon strips and illustrations were very humorous, very funny. He was a funny kid. And... So nobody ever sees his artwork. Oh, well. And I believed. Now I am the backseat driver for America. And I am not at the wheel of control. And I am guilty, I am war, and I am the root of all evil. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road.
Moving on from town to town.
It is 21 past the hour. Connie in Los Angeles writes regarding the drones. Mike, boy, am I feeling old now. I was watching CNN the day the first Gulf War launched in late 1990. To my shock and awe, a war was waged live in my living room. I watched men standing in a control room launching missiles, cheering when a truck was blown up somewhere in Iraq. Sickening. Soon after, that sort of visceral coverage was removed from the live feed. Now we have the mega propagandized channel CNN and kids grown up playing war videos, just doing what they know how to do, kill without a conscience. The drones in a bee colony get their fling and die. Obviously, the people operating the drone program miss the irony. I mean, who's operating the drone? That dies too, right? Crazy stuff. Connie in Los Angeles. Yeah, I know. I know what you mean. Every year on in August, when that horrific anniversary rolls around. Well, no, not that one. The one that George Bush launched. You're talking about first Gulf War, of course, which was Pappy Bush. But the one that was launched by Junior Bush. We play, what is it, about a 6.5 minute video or audio? We play that every year on the anniversary of the shock and awe. Thanks, Connie. Pete is in Newburgh, New York, listening on Sirius. Hey, Pete.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing well. I like listening to your show. I'll just say it's interesting.
Oh, yeah?
I'm a libertarian, so I don't always agree with you.
Well, I would think not.
But I heard you talking about the depleted uranium earlier and radiation sickness and all that. And I don't want to bore everybody with a whole bunch of facts, but depleted uranium has about 1.3 millirem from one meter, which... if you were sitting on it all day long, would give you about double the U.S. legal limit for exposure for a worker. So it is unlikely that people that are exposed to this would get radiation sickness.
Are you a nuclear expert?
I work at a nuclear power plant.
No, that's not what I mean. I phrased it wrong. Are you an expert in the effects of radiation? See, let me back up. The problem with depleted uranium is that when the explosive that depleted uranium encases, when it goes off, this stuff, DU, winds up in the environment, winds up in the dust, winds up in the atmosphere. And the dust, when it's inhaled, obviously, you don't need to be a nuclear anything to understand this. When you inhale the dust and it goes into your lungs, how far does it have to go? When it goes into a human body and winds up in a man's testes or winds up in a woman's reproductive system, how far does it have to go before it does genetic damage to egg and sperm? Not very far at all. So I guess the point, Pete, is that your information about depleted uranium is totally wrong. I'll tell you what to do. Just go to Google or Wikipedia or wherever, you know, whatever source you trust. I think libertarians trust stuff. Although if you're libertarian, you probably shouldn't be using the internet or driving on a federal highway or using the post office. But anyway, look up depleted uranium. Just type in to Google depleted uranium and you'll get probably 15 or 20 million different hits that you can check out. Depleted uranium is a killer. Your political point of view to me is not really all that important because politics and science, like religion and science, just simply don't mix at all. Anyway, thanks for calling, Pete. Have a nice evening. All right, where are we? Getting ready to take a break. That's where we are. Okay, we'll come back after the break. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. We have one open line. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born.
Before the hour. Don in Baltimore writes, Hello, Mike. The audio of the CIA Predator drone sounds like a video game. Imagine a sky full of armed drones constantly flying over the top of your head in Afghanistan. Imagine the people there, not just the real bad guys, knowing that at any minute a missile could be targeting you in the sky above you, and some CIA operative and employee sitting in comfortable rooms surrounded by computers and joysticks thousands of miles away that can, with a keystroke, aim and fire a missile at you or near you and your kids who just happen to be near the pickup truck full of the Taliban bad guys passing, and bang, your collateral damage. Like all of a sudden, bang, truck parts and body parts go flying everywhere. Then imagine the people who fly those drones in Virginia leaving the job, I guess you would call it that, and going home to have dinner with the kids and relaxing home watching American Idol after a day's work of killing people thousands of miles away using a drone and computers. Never for a second are they threatened by any bullets or missiles aimed at them. To be able to kill at will from the sky and never face those you are killing firing bullets at you, I imagine the hatred of drone killers in the sky would make their victims want to find a way to strike back at the killers. The CIA calls it blowback. It could blow back to us with another 9/11. Don in Baltimore. Well, I think the blowback is the utter and absolute collapse of the society. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get into this every night, But really, that's the blowback. We have so many things that need such desperate attention in this country. And the idea that we have people sitting in, rooms that are dark other than video screens, I don't care if it's in Las Vegas or the Canadian border or Langley or D.C., wherever it is, I don't really care that much about it, where the location is. But the fact that these people are sitting there, Americans, with a keystroke, you know, and then on the video screen, you see this little. That's kind of beyond comprehension, isn't it? I know Republicans probably love that stuff because Republicans are cowards. And the idea that they can sit on their asses someplace and use a computer to kill people 15,000 miles away must be orgasmic. For the cowards, I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine James Inhofe sitting in a room and play, hey, I killed a bunch of Taliban bastards today. Better than Viagra. And for some of these bastards, it is better than Viagra. It really is. But I don't care how hard you try, when you're sitting at a computer screen, I would imagine, and you're killing people 15,000 miles away, you don't get the real visceral rush that a real soldier would get. You know, the kill or be killed thing, the thing quickly and instantly, and, you know, count the bodies and later. I'd continue to be astonished when Bill sent me that video. You know, I'm looking at that going, no. I mean, I realize we've been using drone aircraft for a long time, but we were using them for spying missions. You know, we didn't have Hellfire missiles. Those are relatively new, right? Maybe Irish Dave will let me know, since he's a veteran. Well, we have a lot of veterans that listen to this program, but Hellfire missiles, you know, that's very biblical. Come on, those are Christian missiles. Hellfire. Don't the crazy Muslims, just like the crazy Christians, don't they have some weird little name like that for missiles they're developing? Right? But Hellfire missiles, they're like, I mean, when are we going to have a whole bunch of missiles developed that would be called Jesus missiles or rapture missiles? That's probably what's coming next. Rapture missiles. Hellfire missiles. Hellfire. Wow. I mean, that's intense, isn't it? Huh? Well, back to your phone calls. Kevin is in Hartford, Connecticut, listening on Sirius. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
All right. Hey, you know, I've been listening to some liberals and progressives over the past, say, week or two, and they're really upset by some of the decisions that have been made by some Democrats or the party itself in the Senate or Congress.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not surprised at all when they take pro-corporate, even pro-military viewpoints, because the Democratic Leadership Council is so prevalent in the Democratic Party these days that, I mean, you got people like Harold Ford and this guy Martin Malley. I think he's a governor, right, Maryland at one time?
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, they write articles, like, you know, saying how the Democratic Party's got to really go to the center, you know, and they look at people like Howard Dean or anybody that opposes a Joe Lieberman as liberal fundamentalists.
Mm-hmm.
So if you even believe in those old liberal principles and you want that in the party, you're looked at as a liberal extremist, a liberal fundamentalist. And, you know, you got Lanny Davis who goes on, he's a so-called Democrat, but he goes on many talk shows demonizing liberal Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a problem within the party itself with, you know, abandoning even a woman's right to choose. I'm not so surprised, actually, that the Democrats have been waffling on that.
Hey, could I ask a favor? And I say this with great respect, Kevin. I'm trying to get people not to say a woman's right to choose. It's a woman's right to privacy.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, because that's what Roe v. Wade was about. It had to do with the privacy issue.
Well, I know Griswold versus Connecticut was all about that. Yeah,
yeah. And you know, we shouldn't use the frame, you know, the framework that people who want to keep women from having a right to privacy, we shouldn't use their language. And I realize that people on the...
Well, I guess
no, I'm not scolding you. I'm just making a suggestion.
Right, well,
I have a lot of friends who are active in the abortion rights stuff who still call it woman's right to choose. And every time one of them says it and I hear it, I'll just say, hey, Sandy, hey, Carol, you know, why don't you call it what it is? It's a woman's right to privacy, and stop giving these right wing nutcases. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to choose to kill your baby. That's what your choice is. No, it's a woman's right to privacy.
Well,
damn it.
I guess I agree with you there.
Okay, that's all. That's all. Just a throwaway line. That's all.
Yeah,
no
but,
big deal.
But, you know, if anybody wants to dally on a DLC website, it's all there for you to see in plain print.
Well, the Democratic Party, really, I mean, for old line Democrats like me, the Democratic Party is dead. It doesn't exist anymore. There are a few old line Democrats still in Congress, like Dennis Kucinich, I guess. Like
Russ Feingold.
Yeah, well, okay. It's a stretch with Feingold, but okay. Some of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus, two or three, four. There might be, and I don't mean to set myself as an expert about this because I'm not, but just from listening and paying attention, I think out of the 200 and some Democrats that are in the House and the 60 or 58 that are in the Senate, there might be 10 real so-called old-line Democrats who really are Democrats. The rest are gone. The Democratic Party is Republican light. It happened with Clinton. It happened when the Democratic Party realized that rather than stick to their principles, they wanted to win elections. And whatever kind of whoring, no offense to sex workers, that they had to do that, they were willing to do, and they've done it. And the Democratic Party is dead, cold, and decaying. It's got a stake in its heart. It's got a stake up its rectum. It's got a stake in its brain. It's dead. It doesn't exist anymore. So for people like you or me who or these remaining 10 Democrats that are in the House and the Senate, I don't know. It's time to move on. It's time to move on.
Well, I joined the Green Party back in December. Anyway.
Well, there you go. There you go.
I had it with the Democrats at that point because when President Obama invited Joe Lieberman back in so quick, I said, no. I said, I can't do it. I go,
yeah.
This guy's with Sarah Palin. As she's yelling about him consorting with terrorists, he's in the background clapping and smiling, and then they let him back in that quick. No,
I know. Well, Joe Lieberman, I swear to God. And Kevin, I got to move on. Thanks, pal. I appreciate it. Joe Lieberman ought to, they ought to put him on a boat and give him lots of food and water and push him off at, I don't know, Marblehead someplace and just say, Joe, have a nice trip right when you get work. Now get the hell out of town. Maybe he'll wind up in Greenland and they'll look at him and say, oh, a Norse god has showed up. I talked to Adasa about this and I don't know what to do. Oh, well. All right. We have a break coming up here, and we'll take your phone calls when we come back. Hi. The phone number here, we have another open line, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour. Thanks to our crew. I haven't done this for a long time. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Kate Petrini, educational affairs. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, ethics advisors to this program. And our engineer and producer, executive producer, is Kathy Bay. Alex is in Tampa. Hey, Alex.
Yes, how are you, Mike?
I'm okay.
All right. I'm originally from Russia. I lived in this country for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I visit Russia a lot. And many people wonder, on websites when I get or I speak to friends and relatives, they wonder, Bush administration people, they would attempt to convince people in the world that terrorism is dangerous, and we all have to unite and fight.
Mm-hmm.
They came to Russia quite often. Obama came to Russia with the same mission. And at the same time, United States doesn't want to, I would use the word allow instead of put pressure on England to turn in terrorists, convicted terrorists in Russia who committed crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And why wouldn't they put pressure on convince maybe or allow to release those convicted criminals and terrorists to Russia who, like Zakhaev, for example. Let me tell you a little bit about Zakhaev. It's a man who was involved in terrorist attacks in Moscow when almost 300 people got killed.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a year prior to 9/11. And when American media was blaming, if you remember, President Putin, he just became president,
right,
for it, Zakhaev, who was in Interpol at that time, was invited by American Congress to give a speech. And he bragged about, there was a different time then, it was prior to 9/11, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But now he is in England, and now there is such concern in the United States and England about terrorism. Why not return the guy? Why not return?
Was he involved in you're talking about the terror attack of where the people were held?
What you call mastermind.
Was he a man from Chechnya?
Oh, he is a Chechen, but it seems like something else going on, because he lives in London, and he is on the payroll of Berezovsky. Berezovsky is a Russian Jew, very pro-Israeli Jew. He was the head advisor to Buffoon, as I call him, Buffoon Yeltsin in his time, and he was the head negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
Between Chechen and Russian forces at a different time.
Right. Now
they live together with the Chechen terrorists in London.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me say, Alex, and I got to put you on hold because we only have about a minute left. I'm a couple of minutes. I'm familiar with what you're talking about, the case you're talking about, both this man and what happened in that that auditorium where all of those people were murdered. It was pretty horrible. I don't know how to answer your question, though. Russian-American relations have been crazy since 1917, and especially from the end of World War II on. I can't address the issue the way you would like me to. A lot of people in the United States see the Chechen fighters not as terrorists, but as people who are trying to get their independence from Russia. Not living in Russia, I don't know what it would be like to just like not living anywhere where there is terrorist bombings. Yes, we had 9/11, but I mean, an ongoing. I know there are parts of the country where you get on a bus, you don't know if you're going to get home or not, or you get on a subway, or you get board an airplane, you don't know if you're going to land, you don't know because you live in an area where there are. You live in a state or a country where there are active cells of people who want to disrupt, overthrow, change, whatever, and they use bombing and killing and terror. The United States, as far as I'm concerned, is and has been for a very long time the chief exporter of terrorism around the globe. I know during the Cold War, the Soviets were probably a close number two. So at this point, I don't know what to say. The whole thing is madness. We have given a political sanctuary to a guy who was responsible for blowing a Cuban airliner. Was it a Cuban airliner or a Venezuelan airliner out of the sky? A Cuban airliner, I guess. Years and years ago, and we've given him sanctuary. We gave the Shah sanctuary for a while. It's crazy. I don't know. I wish I could answer. I wish I was a smarter man. I wish I had more information. But Alex, I appreciate you checking in, all right? All right. That's it for tonight. I'm sorry if we're leaving you on hold. We will we'll talk again. Take care tonight, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.